Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021 and across Tasmania for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Barry Sraluga, Jared, is a man that was so good when we had him on last week.
You decided to give him another run, and I don't blame you.
We thought we have to go back to the well. For those who don't know, Washington Post columnist, frequent front pager for the Washington Post, which is no mean feat. And fair to say, Jared, while we have been basking in the glory of our Olympic campaign as Australians, yes, there have been several significant news stories to come out of this Olympics, one of which is how Tokyo has dealt with COVID. I think we've had 25 athletes now test positive.
Yep.
And the other one, I think, from an athlete's perspective, has been the story of Simone Biles.
That has been a challenging story, Scoop, and no more challenging than a number of stories that have come through. I think that the original decision was divisive, probably running at about 75-25, support four.
Yep.
But I think we're all challenged when she came straight back into the team and she's going in on the balance beam. Let's find out what it's been like over in the United States. Barry Sraluga, Washington Post columnist, joins us on the line. Barry, welcome once again. This would have challenged a lot of people. I'd be interested in your thoughts on how it unfolded.
Well, I mean, you guys are right. It's a complex story. And I was here the night of the team competition when she didn't look right and she ultimately stepped away. I mean, I think one thing that has to be accounted for in analyzing this story is, you know, I don't know if you guys play golf, but if you play golf and you're standing over a 4-foot putt and you're in that mental space where you're like, I have zero chance of making this putt, you have the yips, that affects you and the ball and the match you're playing, and that's it. If you get the yips as a gymnast, you're talking about not being able to feel where your body is when you're 10 or 12 or 15 feet above the ground. You have no sense of where you are, and therefore you have no sense of how you're going to land. That night, she felt like she was putting herself in danger, and she was putting her team at a disadvantage by not being able to pull off the stunts that are, you know, required of a world-class gymnast. It's been a struggle since then. The other apparatuses all require that sort of level of twisting and tumbling. Vault, she skipped out on. Floor exercise, she skipped out on. The uneven bars, she skipped out on. I'm no gymnastics expert by any stretch, but the people who I'm here with, who I trust on it, say that the tasks on beam, which is what she's going to contest tonight, are a lot simpler. The main challenge is they're done on a 4-inch wide beam. So it's been a huge discussion in the States about mental health, about taking care of yourself, about athletes being able to decide for themselves. It kind of comes to a dramatic conclusion tonight because she is deciding to compete.
So, Jared, and all our listeners, just to give some context here, and Barry's talking about the yips as a comparison, Simone actually wrote in the last 36 hours, I think, on Instagram that she's suffering from the twisties, and essentially saying that for anyone saying that I quit, I didn't quit. My mind and body are not in sync, as you can see here. I don't think you realise how dangerous this is on a hard/competition surface.
Yeah, and I think that was all well and good and well explained, and I think did give perspective to the whole thing. I must admit, though, Barry, when I heard that she was coming back and competing in the balance beam, I had a difference of opinion on the safety issues, and quite clearly that's been well and truly documented in the pages, and I'm sure social media's gone nuts with it. But, I mean, the balance beam, whilst the activities may not be as twistified as some of the other events, it's certainly a pretty hard beam. My old experience as a phys ed teacher is you can do some damage on a balance beam.
Well, for sure. And I'm not discounting it as an exercise itself in the difficulty and the potential danger. I'm saying what I've been told is, yep, that by comparison, it's not the same. And I think there is room for all sides on this discussion. And I think where I've come down on it is simultaneously, you're able to at the same time believe you can take care of yourself from a mental health perspective. You can honestly evaluate yourself in the moment and say you're not able to go. And that can be admired for taking control and speaking up for yourself in a, yep. in a world where certainly an Olympic gymnastics, that hasn't been the case for a long, long time. Coaches have, you know, frankly bullied little girls into doing things that have broken their bodies. You can believe all that it's empowering for an athlete to take control of themselves and then simultaneously admire an athlete who might wobble mentally or might be fighting something physically and fights through it. I think there's more space for both of those things now than there was, you know, maybe even a year ago.
I think it's really, really challenging because I think there isn't an athlete, and put yourself into a team sports perspective, the quarterback or in our game, the center half forward who turns up on grand final day or the final day of the NFL and he's all of a sudden has a panic attack or he's got absolute nerves.
Yeah, like 2 minutes into Super Bowl and
well, suddenly... 2 minutes in, but I mean, I can remember some of the best players I played with, Scoop, vomiting 20 seconds before they went out. Now, the question is going to be, when do you pull the pin and when do you not pull the pin? When do you actually...
But only she can know that, can't you, Jared,
well,
ultimately?
Yeah, but I'm wondering whether or not, you know, the bar for pulling the pin gets down to a level where you don't draw on resilience. You basically listen to your body. Your body's telling you, don't go out there. You're afraid of the result. You're doing this and you're doing that. And therefore, you make the wrong decision. Now, I'm not saying she made the wrong decision.
You're just asking the question. Yeah.
I just wonder where this ends and where this finishes, Barry.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's evolving, right? And I think what's happening is, and I don't want to lean too much on this, but I think what we're seeing is the athletes being more in control of this decision than outside forces.
Yep.
And by that, I mean, not just coaches, and you should listen to your coaches, and coaches should be motivators, but they should also be sensitive to where their athlete is at that moment. And I do think the dynamic is different. I'm not going to overstate how much I know about gymnastics, but I will say that for years and years and years, kind of a study encouraged in the United States when we thought about gymnastics was a gymnast named Carrie Strug in 1996, who had to do a vault to help her team win gold. She was on a severely compromised ankle and she was 18 years old and her adult male coach said, you have to do it. You have to do it. And at the time she pulled it off and she's hobbled and she's hurt and she did it. And this was, you know, sweeping admiration for courage. If you watch the tape now, it looks almost like bullying because some of that is the dynamic. It's, you know, it's not a grown person who's in the position and is able to say no.
Yep.
It very much felt like the power dynamics were off there. So if you then jump forward to 2021, Simone Biles, a 24-year-old woman who is making a decision for herself, there is something there that I think is an evolution in how we think about these things. That doesn't mean that if somebody faces those same things and pushes through them, you can't admire them. I just, again, I come back to that idea that there's the ability for the two worlds to coexist.
So we'll move on. The U.S. women's soccer team lost in the semifinals to Canada last night. They were the short prize favourites. How was that received, given that the northern neighbour has taken the points?
Yeah, that's 20 years since the U.S. women's national team has lost to Canada, although they've had some stirring matches, including in the semifinals in London 9 years ago. There's a couple ways to look at it. One, you know, the rest of the world is catching up to the Americans in women's football. There's no question about that. That's been true going back to, you know, 2000 when they did not win the Women's World Cup. They lost in the quarterfinals in Rio. But I also think this is a transition time for this roster. They've brought a very, very old team to Tokyo. Half the 18 players who dressed last night were over 30 years of age.
Yep.
Carly Lloyd, a mainstay, is 39. Megan Rapinoe, a star, is 36. this results with really, really uneven play from that group, including a draw to Australia, in which both teams were kind of playing very, very cautiously because they knew they could get through with a draw. You know, it just wasn't the brand of football that we have been accustomed to seeing from this group. Very aggressive, very sure-minded, and crisp. It was hesitant. It was sloppy. It was slow at times. So it's an interesting time for the American women's side, because there's a transition coming and it has to happen sooner rather than later.
Jared, I think Barry might have been gotten to by someone high up at the US Open team, because he's talking about transition. And you know as well as I do, when a coach comes out here in our game and says, oh, we're listed in transition, it's like, hang on.
promised us a gold medal, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm just being silly, Barry. I'm trying to get under your skin because we're trying to take a bronze medal off you in that match. So let's hope we do so, huh?
Well, that'd be a big one, right? I mean, I think if you're in Australia right now, if you take down the U.S. women for a bronze medal, that's a major accomplishment. And I would say, guys, I'm the one introducing the idea of transition, that the U.S. women's coach was saying, no, we brought the right roster here. Okay. And we should, and what does that say? It says to me, he didn't do a very good job getting to his players. So
what it says to me, Barry, is he's not as smart as you are. And you watch next week, he'll be talking transition.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about the transition? Like, is your athletics team really disappointing or just disappointing? Because every time I've watched Olympics and I've watched too many, the United States team basically
dominates
or goes close to. Right now, you've won one gold medal.
I think it's disappointing. I mean, there was a world in which you thought that the Americans could sweep the sprints on both sides, maybe everything from four down to one, I mean, maybe even eight, 800 down to 100. And that's obviously not playing out. Just earlier today, I don't know if you guys saw just a thrilling 400 meter hurdles race where Rye Benjamin of the United States broke the world record. The problem is the Norwegian running right next to him broke the mark by, you know, three quarters of a second. Yeah. So there's been some thrilling. I have not been out to track yet, so I'm going tomorrow night. So I'll have a little bit more of a feel for it, but you're right. If you look at those results and you know, that's what we do at the Olympics. Look at the results. The American track and field team is underperforming expectations at the moment.
I won't keep you much longer, Barry, but just your insight into two challenging things that have come up with the Olympics. Do you think the high jumpers should have split the gold? And do you think in the finals of the sprint events, there should be at least one or two breaks for the athletes to get a little bit nervous and not be sent home?
So I think on the first issue, I would just say I was surprised that that was even an option.
Yep.
It's like, you know, I don't know if you guys have big betting pools on tournaments in Australia, but like in the US, if you've come down to a season-long bet and the stakes are very high and the pool is quite large, sometimes two of the competitors who remain will say, hey, let's just split the pot. I didn't know that was an option for Olympic gold. I thought that there should have been a jump off. Those guys are obviously friends. They have competed against each other, but they're quite close. I don't have any problem with giving two golds in a situation where two swimmers touch the wall at the exact same time down to the 100th, or two sprinters cross the line at the exact same time down to the 100th. I thought that was an odd, I don't know that I have a real, I'm not walking away saying this is an injustice. I just thought it was an odd way to end the competition.
Yeah, that's why, Barry, you're very smart, man.
On the sprinters, let's have some, you want the maximum, the best performance you can get. So I'd be in favor of some breaks in there.
Barry, great to have you on. We will touch base with you at the end of the tournament and when the Matildas, our soccer team, are bronze medalists.
Congratulations to them in advance.
Very clever.
Barry Sfraluga there, Washington Post columnist extraordinaire. And I like Jake Knowles' column in The Age today, the absurdity of athletes sharing gold medals. It's very well penned.
So what do you do, Scoop, if two athletes hit the pool wall at the same time?
It's completely different. You give two gold medals. That's not sharing gold medals. You both finish first.
Right. So on a count back,
these two,
you've gone, had the count back.
These two had the option.
They are equal.
No, they've got to have a jump off.
Okay. Oh. If you can see the difference, that's fantastic.
What?
I can't.
What do you mean? One's choosing it.
Zoe, Zoe's with me.
Zoe, who are you actually with?
Zoe's with me.
I think she's with me.
I don't mind them sharing the medal.
There you go.
More sports after
up
this.
Up you, Jake.